Look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back, folks, to this portion of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We are so absolutely excited to have with us Michael Snyder. Unless you've been living under a rock, and I know our audience has not, you know who Michael Snyder is. The Economic Collapse blog, for example. Just one of his sites. The Most Important News, another website. The American Dream, another of his websites. Go to the Economic Collapse blog and check out Michael Snyder. Who is Michael Snyder? Well, I just love the way he writes, too. Former attorney. All right. You know him by his articles. His articles are everywhere. Alex Jones has had him on as a guest. Now, let's show Alex. I love Alex, but let's show him that our audience is I don't want to say better, but more responding to our guests and send Mike Snyder an email. Let him know you heard him on this program, because I guarantee you that the information he's going to provide to you tonight is going to be spot on and consistent with our beliefs, but also important for your information and your preparation. Before we get to Mr. Snyder, I'm just so glad to have found WholeTonesLive.com. If you're sick and tired of being stressed and overwhelmed and unmotivated, we've been there. We understand. Folks, if you feel life has been running you instead of you running your life, we understand. We've been there. We've got an answer for you. Finally, you can experience the scientifically proven powers of music therapy with Whole Tones. Folks, go to WholeTonesLive.com. That's Whole Tones Live with a W, WholeTonesLive.com. They've got a collection of proven music therapy that can help reduce stress, ease your mind, and motivate you. You can get started today and listen to a free sample of this amazing music that heals and inspires at WholeTonesLive.com. We've had so many people write us via email and, in fact, some postal mail and saying, thank you. Thank you. This is what I've been looking for. In fact, I just got, speaking of attorneys, I got an attorney that knows our accountant who listens to the show wrote me an email saying, hey, you know, I got the DVDs, Whole Tones, and our staff working a lot better. He pipes it through he's got a beautiful office, and he pipes it through the office. In fact, he said that his clerks, the secretaries, paralegals are actually getting their work done a lot quicker, which is affecting his bottom line. So, hey, you know, slow it down. No, I'm kidding about that. But certainly they're more creative and motivated, and their work is, as ours, it seems easier and clearer. So, and Michael Terrell, the man behind WholeTonesLive.com. He was on explaining how the music was inspired by the music frequencies of King David. Folks, go to the website, download a free sample at WholeTonesLive.com. Support this broadcast, this show. Go to WholeTonesLive.com. That's WholeTonesLive.com with a W, and download a free sample and order today. And again, I was talking about Michael Snyder, former attorney inside the Beltway. Go figure. Well, one day, I think he answered the call from God, basically. And he knew what he had to do, and he had to start warning people about what's taking place, what the real information is. We're going to get the 411, the information behind his, behind what happened, how he came to be so popular in the alternative media. But he wrote a book just recently. It came out March 25th, 2016. And you want to talk about a great, as an attorney, he'd appreciate this, Exhibit A in the courtroom of life. You're never going to look at the book of Revelation the same way again. The worst times in all of human history are coming, and what Michael Snyder has uncovered in his book, well, there's some dramatic implications there for every man, woman, and child on the entire planet. The Rapture Verdict, that's the name of the book, available in paperback as well as Kindle, on Amazon. It's likely to become one of the most controversial Christian books in decades. It addresses many of the hottest questions being debated today. Number one, will Christians have to go through all of the chaos and such as described in the book of Revelation? Is God's judgment coming to America? Are we on the verge of entering the Great Tribulation? What's the parousia? And how does that ancient Greek word completely shake up conventional theories about the rapture? Oh, it's always a party when we talk about the rapture. Always a party. That and more with our guest, Michael Snyder.
Yeah, let's bring him on. Mr. Snyder, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report. It's great to have you on.
It's really great to be with you guys. You know, your program has really grown, and so many people are blessed by your program. In fact, I just got an email just before I came on, and somebody had heard that I was coming on the program today, and they're saying, hey, have a great time, because, you know, you guys have really become a hub of information and getting the key things that people need to know out to the people. And so it's a real honor to be on with you guys today.
Well, thank you. We're blessed to have you, and we like to think of us just as good stewards of God, and we do what we're told. We show up, and that's half the battle, is showing up and just being vessels for God and for information, but for the truth unfiltered, Watchmen Unleashed. And you know, it may sound trite, but that's what's. But thank you so much. And we really appreciate it. But we certainly have been following. We cite you often. A lot of the information we talk about comes from you. Now, I don't know where you want to start. Joe and I were talking before the program. Man, there's just so many things to get into. If you want to, just for the people who really don't know Michael Snyder but know your articles, you want to give us a kind of a basic rundown of who Michael Snyder is?
Sure. If you go back a decade ago, you know, I was fairly newly married, and my wife and I, we were living right across the river from Washington, D.C., and every morning she would take me to the metro station. I would get on the train, go into the heart of Washington, D.C., where I worked as an attorney, right down on K Street. Now, you know, a lot of people, when I say that, they say, oh, that sounds really prestigious, but I was on the low end of the totem pole. And, you know, in D.C., it's something like one out of every 12 residents of D.C., is a lawyer, so the place is just crawling with them, so they're all over the place, so it's not special to be exactly special to be a lawyer in Washington, D.C. But so I was working, and basically nobody knew who I was, nobody cared who I was, but I saw all the corruption around me, the direction where our country was going, and I thought, well, what in the world can I do that could possibly make a difference, you know, because I was about as anonymous could be. And so, you know, I thought about it, I prayed about it, and then I felt led to check out, you know, this thing called blogging. And then, you know, I wasn't familiar with it, but I started doing some research, and I learned that, okay, there are already more than a million other blogs out there. So why in the world would anyone want to pay attention to anything that I had to say? You know, you have these thoughts. But I went ahead and I started. And of course, when I first started, you could have measured my readership with a microscope, extremely small. But, you know, one of the key things that I did that so many people, you know, stumble over is that I didn't give up. I kept going, and I kept writing, and the audience started to build over time. And then, you know, you get to the end of 2009, and I started the Economic Collapse blog, you know, right around Christmas. And at the time, of course, we were dealing with the aftermath of the greatest recession since, you know, the Great Depression of the 1930s. Millions of people had lost their jobs. Millions of people were losing their homes through foreclosure. And people knew they weren't getting solid answers from the mainstream media. And so they're seeking out alternative sources of information. And so, you know, the website that, you know, started to really grow rapidly. And shortly thereafter, I started endoftheamericandream.com, which has also become very, very popular. And I became kind of this wave of the alternative media, which has exploded as people have become disenfranchised and they've become distrustful of the mainstream corporate media. And so they've turned to sources like your radio show and my websites. And, of course, you know, people not only find my articles on my websites today, but if my articles are actually found on dozens of other very prominent websites all over the world, some much larger, more prominent than my own. So my material is actually read far more off of my websites than on my websites. And so, you know, God has opened these doors for just... And me and my wife, since that time, we've moved. We moved from the Washington, D.C. area, and initially we moved out near Seattle, but then coming up on 5 years ago, we moved out here to the mountains of Idaho in the middle of nowhere. And you think if you're going to affect the world, you want to be there in a place like Washington, D.C. Wow, that's where you can affect the world. But God took us out of there to literally the middle of nowhere. But thanks to the Internet, the power of the Internet, ordinary people like my wife and I, we can literally impact people all over the planet from our little home here. So every day, you know, my wife and I, we are ordinary people. We just get up and try to do the very best we can to wake people up. You know, like you guys, we just consider ourselves to be watchmen on the wall. And from our little spot on the wall, we're yelling and screaming as loud as we can to try to wake people up while there's still time, because, you know, we believe that this country is on a very, very dark path. And if we don't turn around, the consequences are going to be unlike anything that any of us have ever experienced before.
Boy, he said a mouthful. And it's great to meet you, know who you are now. That human factor you joined now with your articles, with the information you provide. This is great. So now we know who Michael Snyder is, and we really do appreciate you. And we've had so many people send us guest requests saying, please have Michael Snyder on. Please. And we got a ton of emails when we announced your appearance earlier in the week. So many people saying, oh man, I just can't wait to hear what he's got to say. Which brings me to my opening question, counselor, if you will. My opening question, I guess. You have really your finger on the pulse of the landscape all across America. Now, you know what's going on. I mean, you know where we've been. I've read your articles where you cite statistics, and you know history, which is important because you got to know where we've been, and in the context of where we've been, to know where we're headed. My question is very simple: if you were going to triage our problems, what do you think from the most important? Well, what do you think our most important issues are to talk about here on this broadcast today, out of everything you've researched and looked at here over the recent, well, the last week, last 2 weeks, last month, I don't know, since the beginning of the year? What's on your heart to really talk about?
Well, that's a tough question. I mean, certainly we want to talk about the economy today, and just today we learned initial claims for unemployment benefits, you know, shot up another 20,000 last week. So we're starting to see the downturn of the economy show up, and people are starting to lose their jobs. You know, just in my own extended family, three people have lost their jobs since the start of the year. So people are losing jobs, and they're starting. And so we want to talk about that tonight. But, you know, in terms of just overall what's going on with this country, you know, we've turned away from what our founding fathers intended. We've basically totally rejected that. And, you know, and a lot of people say, oh, you know, Barack Obama, he's so bad. Hillary Clinton, she's so bad. Congress, all this and that. But the truth is that we really have gotten the leaders that we deserve. And at this point, the American people, especially the younger people, younger adults, they're rejecting pretty much everything that America once stood for. In fact, there was a survey which recently came out which showed that more than half of all U.S. adults under the age of 30 now say that they reject capitalism. So, and you know, we see this desire for socialism with the, you know, with the young people, especially, you know, supporting people like Bernie Sanders. You know, if it was just people under the age of 30 that were voting in the Democratic primaries, Bernie Sanders would have won by a landslide over Hillary Clinton, because, you know, yeah, you know, the population as a whole is becoming more liberal, more socialist, more progressive, but it's especially true of our young people, our young adults, you know, where our colleges and universities have been turned into basically indoctrination centers for the radical left, for the progressive movement. Now, I know, because I spent 8 years at these, you know, at institutions of higher learning in this country. So basically, everything that America once stood for, that it's supposed to be, that our founding fathers intended for this country, we've rejected. And we can talk about a whole number of elements regarding this tonight. But if, you know, if we continue to do this and continue down this path, I really don't see much of a future left for this nation. You know, of course, during election season, people say, well, you know, if we can just get the right guy in the White House, he's going to save us. If we can just, you know, get the right people in the Congress, you know, but, you know, unfortunately, you know, I don't see that happening. I believe that America is coming apart around us in thousands of different ways, and we, you know, in different articles I talk about elements of this overall implosion and collapse, where, you know, it's not just economics, it's not just politics, it's not just the moral decay, but it's everything, just about every way imaginable. Our society is literally falling apart all around us, and you know, people, you know, yep, life may seem somewhat still stable and normal for the moment. But I believe that we're at the precipice of an implosion that is going to be absolutely historic.
Yeah, and I agree with you. You know, we see what we've done in the Middle East. We see the turmoil that has created, you know, from Al-Qaeda to ISIS, the overthrowing of nations, the dumbing down of society incrementally. And you mentioned it during before we came on air, the apathy that's been created in much of the people today. It's almost like, and I know you must deal with this a lot, trying to bridge the gap from those that understand and I guess we'll use the term are awake versus those who either choose to be or continue to be oblivious or ignorant to what is really going on in this country and in this world, from the corruption to the immorality. It just continues to snowball out of control, and we're seeing, you know, the cause and effect of that, from the perversion of our society sexually to, you know, the Hollywood entertainment industry mirroring and promoting that, to the economic conditions of our country on the verge of a meltdown beyond anything that the Federal Reserve or IMF would ever be able to correct. So how do we bridge the gap and help people to where, you know, we see and meet this resistance of truth? But how do we bridge that gap?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult, because the alternative media is growing, and we're informing people, we're trying to wake people up, but we have to realize who we're up against. And it's this corporate behemoth that basically controls, you know, what people are thinking about. What I'm talking about is the mainstream media, where Nielsen and other sources have found that the average American today, you know, watches television. The average American, it's about 5 hours a day of television. And then when you include everything else, I'm talking about movies, I'm talking about video games, you know, cell phones, you know, on the computer, you know, radio, You know, when you include all sources of news and information and entertainment, the average American, studies have found, is plugged into this matrix approximately 10 hours a day. And all this news and information and entertainment, more than 90% of it is controlled by just six gigantic media corporations. You know, they own publishing houses, radio networks, cable networks, you know, movie studios, you know, and so they, and of course, then those six companies are owned in turn by the elite of the world. And so when you let anyone, you know, basically feed programming to you, and it's called programming for a reason, when they feed programming to you for 10 hours a day, that's going to have an impact on you. It's going to affect how you think, how you view the world, what your, you know, moral standards are, all of it. And so to try to combat that, basically a whole population that is just continually plugged into this giant matrix and being fed, you know, for example, when we go to school or to work or, where, you know, wherever we are, and even at the dinner table, we're having conversations with our family. What are we talking about? Well, we're talking about a program we saw on television last night. We're talking about some sporting event. We're talking about something we read in the newspaper. Basically, the agenda for what we consider to be important, what we think, what we, our conversations with our, you know, our family, our friends, our coworkers, the agenda is set by the global elite through the, this giant media, conglomeration. And that's a very, very powerful force to try to combat. And I'm not exactly sure, I mean, how to do that. We're doing the best we can, but really, the programming of society that's going on is unlike anything we've ever really seen before in human history.
The acceleration toward whatever event horizon we may be facing, or multiple events, just seems, I mean, it's astounding to me. You know, Michael, are you finding it more difficult right now? Well, let me preface the question by saying that I have experienced in my sphere of people who I talk to this widening divide among people who believe things are fine, that we needn't worry about too much. Oh, you know, there are some problems. And other people who are saying, man, we are in some really deep trouble. That divide seems to be getting, well, it seems to be growing. Have you found that recently?
Oh, I definitely have. I've found that. You know, back in 2008 and 2009, you know, people were, you know, the financial crisis was fresh in their minds, and people were like, yeah, we need to do something, and you know, things are falling apart. But then we've had kind of had this bubble of relative stability. And so, you know, kind of at the peak of the prepping movement, it was estimated there were about 3 million preppers in the United States. But since that time, a lot of people have kind of lost the enthusiasm. You know, things have somewhat stabilized. And, you know, normal life has kind of continued, even though the middle class is shrinking. We can talk about all those things today. And so people have, you know, been tempted to think, well, maybe it's not the end of life as we know it. Maybe everything's going to be okay. And so a lot of people have kind of, some people have quit prepping, and they've said, well, you know, yeah, things are not ideal, and, you know, a lot of things are still going downhill, but, you know, I don't have to store up food buckets in my basement. I don't have to do this, you know. And so, but then those who are really aware really can see what's happening, but it's just not kind of, you know, it exploded into the consciousness of the general population. So there is this divide right now where those who can kind of see what's happening and understand what's coming, they've been preparing, and they're, most of them are already, you know, pretty prepared for what's ahead. Meanwhile, those that are apathetic, those that have blind faith in Barack Obama and the Federal Reserve and our current system, they haven't prepared, and they're not likely to get prepared. So those who have felt the need to get prepared are pretty much already prepared. Those that didn't want to prepare, they're not prepared. So I think that's kind of where we're at, and we're going to try to wake as many people up as we can. But to be honest, we're already getting to the point, and we can talk about some of these economic reasons why, where if people haven't prepared, it's almost too late. I mean, people need to do whatever they can, but we're getting so late in the game, I believe, that it's, if people try to start now and get fully prepared at this point, it's kind of really, really late in the game, in my opinion, and I think it'll become self-evident as we move into the months forward.
Okay. Yeah, we need to talk about a lot of things from the economy. We've got a full plate, really, of domestic issues, the economy, the elections, obviously, and then on the larger scale, all across the globe, the geopolitical things that are taking place, and, of course, stitching all of that together, your new book as well, The Rapture Verdict. Of course, you've authored other books, including The Beginning of the End. Very, very good book as well. In fact, I recommend everything written by Michael Snyder. That's just my personal preference, but I believe you'll be enriched. There's no bad product or no bad book that Michael Snyder writes or whatever. It's all, I guarantee you will learn things by his writings. But let me ask you about this before we get too far down the road here. I believe it was yesterday or today, perhaps, you wrote an article on economiccollapseblog.com. I should say theeconomiccollapseblog.com. Armageddon, are you ready for the chaos that will ensue when the power grid is brought down? We had Gary Haven on, and Mike Norris, filmmaker for Armageddon, yesterday. We had them on the show. We were talking about an EMP. What's your feeling about the possibility of an EMP? I mean, Mel.
Well, it's something I've been concerned about for years, because really, if you wanted to take America down, our power grid is one of the areas where we're most vulnerable, where, you know, because, you know, if you explode a big bomb in a city or something, well, that affects that city. But if you were to take our power grid down, which is extremely vulnerable, you could fundamentally change life on this planet, and you could have the biggest kind of long-term bang for your buck, if you would, you know, in terms of doing real damage to this country, you know. And in fact, you know, the EMP Commission was established in 2001 to study this problem. So they studied it for years, and then they came back, they reported to Congress, and in 2008 they told Congress, hey, this is really a possibility, you know, whether it's a nuclear weapon, you know, exploded at high altitude over the United States, or several nuclear weapons, you know, taking out our power grid, or if it's a solar event that comes and hits us, like the Carrington event back in 1859 that fried telegraph machines from coast to coast. If something like that happened and took out our power grid, well, according to this commission, which studied this for years and reported to Congress, they said up to 90% of the U.S. population could be dead within a year. Now, you know, personally, I think that's a little high, but what if it's even half the country? What if we're still talking about an event that is absolutely unimaginable. So, you know, we're so dependent on technology today. So, you know, what would we do in a world with no lights and no cell phones, no computers, no televisions, no ATMs, no banking, no cash registers, no refrigerators, no hospital equipment? Well, we would be in a massive amount of trouble very, very rapidly. And most people don't realize, you know, and they say, well, who's going to explode a nuclear weapon over our country? You know, I think that's actually a very realistic scenario. But even if that never happens, scientists tell us that it's inevitable that someday we're going to have another, a similar event to the Carrington event back in 1859, where the sun is going to hit us with one of these huge electromagnetic blasts. And in fact, in 2012 and in 2013, there were very close calls, very close calls. If either of those had hit us directly, I mean, we would have had this kind of scenario that's portrayed in this movie, Armageddon. So I'm very concerned about it, and basically to kind of strengthen our system, it would only cost a few billion dollars to kind of harden our system, help prepare us at least to a certain degree against this type of event. But Barack Obama doesn't want to do it, Congress doesn't want to do it, and they're wasting billions of dollars in some of the most bizarre ways imaginable anyway. you know, why not spend it on actually doing something for our power grid, which is probably where one of the areas we're most vulnerable with in terms of national security, homeland security. You know, it's far more important to do something about our power grid than it is to, you know, basically molest us at the airports and all these other things that they're doing in the name of national security. But they won't do anything. They haven't taken action. We're extremely vulnerable. Even Ted Koppel has written a book about this. And let me tell you something. Recently, I was talking to one of my contacts, and he spoke directly to someone in our intelligence community who was involved in the arrest recently of a dual citizen. He was a U.S. national and a Chinese national, and he was apparently working, connected to one of our nuclear power facilities. But they arrested this individual, and the person in the intelligence community who was involved in this arrest told my contact directly, and I got it directly from him, that basically the Chinese, all they would have to do to take down our power grid is basically press a button. They could do it with a press of a button. And it's not just the Chinese that are developing these capabilities. It's the Russians. It's the North Koreans, you know, where they're developing these cyber warfare capabilities. But basically the message that my friend wanted me to understand is that our power grid is far, far more vulnerable than any of us would dare to imagine. And if it was to be taken down, you know, just certain number of these major substations, you know, it would take potentially a year or longer to, you know, just to start to restore power. And what would that look like? I mean, there's been movies like Armageddon and some others which have explored this, but it's a very, very realistic scenario. Unfortunately, because we've never really faced it before, you know, there's this normalcy bias where people say, well, it's never happened in the past. It's not something I need to be worried about. But it's something that I'm very, very concerned about.
Yeah, that's,
you know, and it's almost like we attended a conference on EMPs when that
book, Tuesday, May 4th, 2010.
Yeah, when that book EMP came out. And, you know, just listening to you describe the problem again, just in my mind, reiterates the fact that it's not the question of why Congress or the administration hasn't done anything about it. It's obvious to me that because of the easy solution, it would be, I think they said it would take 2 years, a few billion dollars to reground everything or rewire everything so it would not be affected by an EMP. It's a matter of them not wanting to, I think, leaving the door open for the scenario to happen. Because, you know, we talk a lot about, and you write a lot about, the economic problems we have in this country.
Oh, wait a second. I love in his article on the, if you go to the economiccollapseblog.com, I love his comment on there. It's almost as if a cloud of insanity has descended upon the land and nobody can think straight. His reference to Obama, and Congress and everyone inside the Beltway about this. That's amazing.
Yeah, and what I was going to say is, you know, I've done a lot of research on the healthcare electronic health records, RFID. In my opinion, could be the mark of the beast system. But you know, we talk about on this show, is this economic system, is this Western democratic system of government going to have to be torn down in order for the New World Order to be implemented, or is it going to be a smoother transition? And I believe that it will not be a smooth transition. The old system will have to be torn down. But what better way to take care of the economy, and not only that, but all their other concerns, than with an EMP, rather than just dealing with, you know, the economic or political backlash from crashes in the economic market or unrest in the political arena, than just having an EMP, letting the American people try to survive amongst themselves for a month or two, followed by a declaration of martial law or sending in Homeland Security to clean up the rest of the mess. It seems like, from their standpoint of depopulation and reconsolidation of power, that would be the most effective way to do this. Would you agree, or do you have a different perspective on that?
Oh, I agree with you that it could certainly, because what the elite like to do, they like to use chaos in which, you know, if they want to make a major paradigm shift, we'll just bring in some chaos, and then they'll impose the solution that they had in mind all along, or move society in the direction that they want. Because when things are normal and things are good, people are not usually ready for big changes. But when things get crazy, when people don't have food, when people, when people are hurting, well, then they can advance their agendas very, very rapidly. And so, you know, they never want a good crisis to go to waste. And so, and I think the elite are getting ready to make big moves, to make big shifts. And, you know, so I think that so a major crisis of this magnitude would serve their purposes very, very well. And already, in the background, they're starting to work on things that they want to implement. For example, there was this recently, there was just this secret meeting for bankers in New York City. It was right there in an office just off of Times Square, and we may have never even learned about it except for this one article in Bloomberg where there were executives from more than 100 different financial institutions gathered at this meeting, and the presentation was from a company known as Chain, which I think is very apropos, as in chains of our enslavement. But this company Chain unveiled a technology that transforms paper currency, U.S. dollars, into pure digital assets. And so we're all used to, transferring money out of our bank accounts electronically to pay someone else or to someone else. But the idea, with this new technology, it would be digital dollars. It would be replacing paper money, and the currency wouldn't be tied to your bank account necessarily at all. The currency would actually be in your mobile device. It would be digital. It would be kind of a replacement for a Bitcoin and all those kind of cryptocurrencies. It would be a replacement for paper money. But it would be the digits would actually be the currency. And so you'd use your mobile phone or other mobile device where you go to pay for something, and intended to kind of switch from our current, paper money and coins to going to a system that's entirely digital. And right now we're seeing this move toward a cashless society all over the world. You know, for example, in Sweden, 95% of all retail transactions are already cashless. They're taking ATM machines out by the hundreds, if you can believe that. In church in Sweden, if you go, most people, they swipe their card or they do it electronically. And even homeless people, the government gives out, payment machines to homeless people. So when they sell their newspapers or they're asking for money, it can be done electronically. If you want to take a bus in Sweden, in many areas, you can't even pay with cash anymore. And there's a lot of banks, actually, in Sweden today that won't give out cash or won't take cash because they've gone that much in terms of toward a cashless system.
Obviously that is the end game, isn't it? Cashless,
yeah,
totally cashless. Because
it's a complete control system.
Yeah, can't control what you can't. They can't control what they can't see. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course banks love this idea because if it's totally cashless and we can't stuff money in our mattresses, well then we have to deal with the banks and every time we swipe our cards they collect a fee, so they make more money, so they like that idea. And then of course governments like the idea of a cashless society because if everything's cashless and everything goes through the system, well, they can watch and track and monitor everyone. And they say, well, we're going to crack down on tax evaders and drug dealers and money launderers and terrorists. That's a big thing, a big excuse they like to use. But really, basically, our financial privacy would be gone. The government would see what everyone's doing, what everyone's buying, how everyone's using their money. And it would also set up the door for potential tyranny where the government could be the gatekeeper and say, okay, everyone needs to use this cashless system, but in order to use it, you've got to have the proper government-sanctioned form of identification. So you've got to come in and get your biometrics or, get your card or whatever it is, or have to take some type of loyalty oath. So the possibility for tyranny because if everyone has to participate, and the government can set the terms for participation, and if you don't participate, well, you can't buy, you can't sell, you can't open a bank account, you can't have a job. Basically, you're done for. And so, yeah, and those of us that know the Bible kind of know the direction this is going, but this is happening all over the world, not just in Sweden. In Denmark, that their government actually has a stated goal of, quote, eradicating cash, unquote, by the year 2030. In Norway, the biggest bank in the entire country recently came out and requested of the government, told the government, said, hey, let's get rid of cash entirely. You know, let's totally get rid of it. In Spain, all cash transactions over 2,500 euros have now been banned. In France and Italy, it's even more restrictive. All cash transactions over 1,000 euros have been banned. And that's a way to slowly ban cash, is to set a cap on cash transactions, saying you can't use cash for any transactions over that, and then slowly lower the cap, lower and lower and lower. And if you get it low enough, you've essentially completely banned cash. And so that's a way to slowly, but it's happening all over the world. Even in India, there's a major push to give people these debit cards and whatever, and to get people to give up using physical cash. But this is where it's going. This is what the global elite want. And, and that's why the secret meeting in New York was so alarming, because the reason it's secret, and they're just revealing it kind of to the New World Order bankers, is because they don't want the general public to know what's going on, because, of course, what are people like me and you going to do? We're going to get upset, and we're going to say, hey, we don't want to go to a cashless system. It's a threat to our liberty and our freedom. But, so they do it in secret, but that's why it's so important. We need to get the word out about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what you mentioned there about a loyalty oath and using terrorism. Most of the funding of terrorism comes from our own U.S. dollar, and the governments and institutions, NGOs, and international organizations with access to those terror groups, you know, in direct relation from our government, the funding. And we know, you know, a lot of these false flags or reasons that they use are reasons or problems that they created. But when you said loyalty oath, that took me right to Scripture and Revelation with the mark of the beast. You know, no man might buy or sell, lest he has the mark, whether free or slave or rich or poor. And it's chilling to see how close we are coming to that, especially in Europe. But you mentioned some articles that I remember reading about right at the end of the year in 2015, where reading about the homeless men who would get the card readers, and how it was 95% cashless already over there. And it would just take one crisis, one even economic collapse. And you alluded to it when at the beginning of the hour, talking about the stock market numbers and the trends that are going on in the financial system of the U.S., how we are moving towards that. You know, we've went through the quantitative easing phase, where in the Weimar Republic, we remember seeing how the inflation was so bad that wheelbarrows full of money could not even be used to buy a loaf of bread. And, you know, we worry about that happening here. We see Saudi Arabia threatening us financially, about the 28 pages. There is a lot of economic insecurity in this country for those of us who are paying attention, and you know, people worry about their 401ks, their stock markets, the social security system, all these Ponzi schemes that have been set up. And what better way to bring everybody into submission but to threaten their future and or their future abilities for retirement and or future abilities to live if they say you have to do X, Y, and Z or you cannot be part of our community. And that's the exact direction that they're moving in. And in my research, they're merging this through the healthcare system, which is their leg in order to implement this this type of system. What are some of the indicators of the economy that you see here in America that we are going to move towards a more consolidated currency or away from the dollar? I know that the Chinese yuan recently is announced a gold-backed currency. What are some of the other indicators we should be looking for ahead of major changes here for the U.S. economy?
Well, I think before we get to kind of you know, I think we're going to experience a major financial crisis. We've already kind of had the four shocks, whether it was in what we saw in August, where we had the greatest financial shaking since the crisis of 2008. Then in January, you know, to start the year in early February, another great shaking took global markets, U.S. markets down even further. But then they've kind of recovered, so people think that we're okay. But, you know, I can talk about a lot of these numbers which show that, no, you know, the markets have had their ups and downs, but over the past 6 months to a year, things have just gotten worse and worse and worse in terms of the economic fundamentals. So we're moving into this crisis, and this crisis, and then, of course, there's going to be a response, and they're going to bring in a lot of these things. And the U.S. dollar is going to die, just not yet. You know, I don't believe it's imminent, as some people out there do, but I believe they are eventually going, the dollar is eventually going to die, and they are going to try to replace it eventually, but just not yet. First, I believe we're going into a horrible, horrible crisis, and even now we're starting to see the economy slow down. I mean, just today we learned that, the initial claims for unemployment shot up again by another 20,000. So we're starting to see, you know, these claims for unemployment rise. And the reason is because firms are laying off people right now. In fact, according to Challenger Grain Christmas, U.S. firms announced 35% more job cuts during April than they did in March. So it's accelerating. And so far, for the first 4 months of 2016, job cut announcements are running 24% higher than they did during the exact same period in 2015. So firms are starting to lay off more people. And the reason they're doing this is because sales are down, earnings are down. In fact, if you look at total business sales in terms of the amount of stuff that companies are actually selling to people in this country, they've been declining now for nearly 2 years, since late 2014. And at this point, total business sales are down 15% from late 2014. In other words, businesses are selling 15% less stuff than they were, you know, nearly 2 years ago. That's a huge move downward. And as a result of selling less stuff, we're seeing the inventory to sales ratio rise dramatically. In fact, at this point, it's the highest it's been since the depths of the last recession. And what that means is there's lots and lots of unsold stuff sitting around out there that companies can't get rid of. And that's a sign of a very unhealthy economy. If you look at corporate earnings have now declined for four quarters in a row. This is, you know, we're seeing this downward slide. And for the first quarter of 2016, profits for companies listed on the S&P 500 were down 7.1% compared to the same period a year ago. The economy is slowing down. And as a result of earnings being down, profits being down, companies making less money, we're seeing a lot more bankruptcies. In fact, commercial bankruptcies in April were up 32% on a year-over-year basis, and Chapter 11 bankruptcy filings were up 67% compared to the same month a year ago. So we're seeing bankruptcies, companies going under at a rate we haven't seen since the last time around. This is exactly what we would expect if we're in the early chapters of a new economic crisis. Or you look at stuff being shipped around the country in terms of being bought and sold and shipped by air, by different methods, by rail. Well, rail traffic last month was down 11% compared to the same month in 2015. And I recently wrote an article. I included this picture. It was of 292 Union Pacific train engines that were sitting in the middle of the Arizona desert, just sitting there idle, not moving, because they're just sitting there being stored, because there's literally nothing for them to do because rail traffic is down so much. You know, especially the coal industry has been destroyed. The U.S. economy has lost 191,000 mining jobs just since September 2015. Since the beginning of last year, we've lost over 100,000 energy jobs in the oil industry and so forth. And so this economic slowdown is here. It's increasing. It's accelerating. All the same things we saw just before the great crash of 2008 are happening. And so I want people to understand that it's here. It's happening. And it's going to get a lot worse.
Can't argue with you there. And those are some staggering statistics and numbers that you just gave.
You know what, Joe? I hope people heard and really understood the significance of those numbers. We're not getting the truth from the mainstream corporate Illuminati-controlled mass media. I mean, we're not being told the truth about the state of our economy. You mentioned something just during that conversation. You're not expecting an economic... If I heard you correctly, did you say you're not expecting an economic collapse soon or the dollar to collapse soon, like in the short term? Or did I misunderstand you?
Well, I was specifically addressing the U.S. dollar.
Okay.
Because, you know, in terms of the U.S., a lot of people say, oh, I want to get rid of all my paper money. You know, I want to put everything into gold and silver, and I love gold and silver. But in the initial stage of what we're moving into, it's going to be similar to 2008. If you remember back then, you know, we had a situation where all of a sudden millions of people started losing their jobs. And because they didn't have anything to fall back on, basically more than 60% of the country was living paycheck to paycheck, just like it's happening now. All of a sudden people couldn't pay the mortgage, they couldn't pay the bills, and so then they lost their homes, and they went from living kind of a comfortable middle class lifestyle to being out on the street very, very rapidly. Well, that's why I encourage everyone that we do need, and people do need an emergency fund that can cover, I believe, at least 6 months of your bills. So if you lose a job or you have a business reversal or whatever, or some kind of emergency, you can still pay the mortgage, you can still pay the rent, you can still buy food for your family. So in addition to, you know, I'm a big believer in storing up food and supplies, and I love gold and silver, but also people are going to need some dollars, some money, in the initial stage of this crisis. Now, later on, I do believe the dollar is going to totally collapse. They're going to try to replace it and all these things. And so I do believe that the death of the dollar is coming, but I don't want people... And so there's going to be different strategies required for different stages of the crisis. So at some point, yeah, your dollars are going to be quite worthless, but not yet. In the initial stage of what's coming, you're going to need them still to pay your bills. So that's the distinction I'm trying to make.
Thank you. It helps me understand where you're coming from a little bit better, and I tend to agree with that. And are we witnessing this distinction too? I think it's important. Are we witnessing a death, or are we witnessing a homicide here? Are they killing the dollar deliberately, or is this death by 1,000 paper cuts and, you know, ignorance?
So much of what Barack Obama has done, for example, just take him, you know, a lot of people say, well, is he just incompetent, or is he just, delusional, or is he purposely trying to harm this country? And the more time goes by, the more it seems like, wow, it sure seems like a lot of coincidences are stacking up. So, you know, the more time goes by, the more I tend to lean toward that a lot of what we're seeing is purposeful, because, you know, basically, you know, the United States has been the great beacon, to a certain degree for liberty and freedom traditionally around the world. And to a certain extent, it's the patriots, you know, because we still have patriots here. We still have people who love this country, who believe in the ideals that our founding fathers, you know, tried to, you know, instill and set forth in our Constitution. So there's still a large percentage of this country that believes in the U.S. Constitution. But to the elitists, the global elitists, they see that as one of the biggest obstacles to kind of implementing their new world order. Because most of the rest of the world, you know, you look over in Europe, they've pretty much fully embraced socialism, progressivism, you know, and it's, you know, Europe is already kind of mostly a post-Christian society. You know, South America is, you know, really embraced socialism, although it's not working out really well down there if you look in Venezuela and Brazil right now. But much of the rest of the world is ready, you know, is pretty much ready to embrace kind of the agenda of the New World Order, but really, here in the United States, there's still large blocks of people that are resisting and don't want that and want to take this country back in the direction of the U.S. Constitution and the way that things should be in this country. And so, I think that, they're envisioning bringing the United States down to a very significant degree and reducing our influence in the world as a way to kind of advance what they're trying to do.
Very interesting. Mr. Snyder, we are up against our top of the hour break. I know we didn't really talk before the show. We have a 5-minute break starting here in just a minute. So feel free to
hydrate.
Yeah, get some coffee, refresh. But when we come back, I want to get into, if we can get into the presidential election, get your take on what you're seeing, both in the Republican and the Democratic side, leading up to the conventions, then to the election. And I'd love to talk about your book, your latest book, and your other books as well. And anything you want to talk about and promote, we're leaving the door wide open for you to do so. But folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on this Thursday edition with author, investigative journalist, attorney, Michael Snyder. His websites are, you can go to theeconomiccollapseblog.com, or you can go to endoftheamericandream.com, also themostimportantnews.com. Just look under the description on the Blog Talk show page or on the YouTube and get his information there. We'll be right back with Michael Snyder.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.